Coming up, many women veterans, some of them single mothers, say they come back from war to neither jobs nor homes and don't get as much help as men. Bob Fall reports on one organization trying to help. Also, measles vaccinations. Deborah Potter reported last year on the national debate that has recently flared up again. Should all parents have to have their children vaccinated? What about religious objections? What if one unvaccinated child could cause the infection of many others?
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome. I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. This week, faith groups around the world reacted with grief and anger to the latest two videotaped killings by ISIS. One victim was a Christian journalist from Japan who was beheaded, and the other a Muslim Jordanian pilot who was burned to death. In Jordan, prayers and remembrances were held for the pilot, while many Muslim groups denounced his murder as barbaric, even satanic. The Council on American-Islamic Relations emphatically said that ISIS had a false interpretation of Islam. Here in Washington, a group of American Muslim leaders met with President Obama behind closed doors at the White House. They discussed strategies to combat ISIS and issues facing the U.S. Muslim community, including anti-Muslim violence and concerns about civil rights. Fighting religious extremism was also a major topic at the National Prayer Breakfast held in Washington Thursday. More than 3,500 leaders from many faiths gathered for the annual event, and this year there was a surprise special guest, the Dalai Lama. Kim Lawton has more.
It was the first time the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism attended the prayer breakfast. It was also the first time he's appeared at the same public event as President Obama, although the two have met privately. The Dalai Lama did not speak, but was recognized from the podium several times.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama, we're honored by his presence.
Supporters and opponents of the Dalai Lama both demonstrated outside. The Chinese government criticized the exiled leader's appearance, saying it would damage U.S.-China relations. Although the prayer breakfast traditionally has had a strong evangelical tone, it has become increasingly diverse in recent years. The head table for this, the 63rd annual breakfast, included several prominent non-evangelical religious leaders. During his address, President Obama emphasized the importance of religious freedom. He condemned ISIS, calling it a brutal, vicious death cult that has betrayed Islam. But he also noted that Christians and people of other faiths have committed acts of violence in the name of religion as well.
This is not unique to one group or one religion. There is a tendency in us, a sinful tendency, that can pervert and distort our faith. And so as people of faith, we are summoned to push back against those who try to distort our religion, any religion, for their own nihilistic ends.
The president said the many challenges the world faces highlight the need for prayer. I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
Also on Thursday, House Speaker John Boehner announced that Pope Francis will address a joint meeting of Congress during his visit to Washington in September. He'll be the first pope ever to do so. In other news, slain Catholic Archbishop Oscar Romero of El Salvador was declared a martyr by Pope Francis. Romero was a champion of the poor. He was assassinated in 1980 by a right-wing death squad after criticizing El Salvador's military government. For years, the Vatican had blocked his becoming a saint because of his allegedly leftist leanings. But Francis removed that barrier. Romero's martyrdom paves the way for his beatification, the last step before sainthood. A South Carolina court ruled this week that a breakaway group of Episcopal churches can keep property and assets worth $500 million. The conservative Diocese of South Carolina severed ties with the Episcopal Church USA in 2012 over theological differences, including the ordination of gay clergy. That set off a legal battle over the control of real estate that includes historic churches dating back to the 17th century. The National Church plans to appeal. Britain is one step closer to legalizing three-parent babies, babies created from the DNA of three people. This week, the House of Commons approved legislation allowing the controversial procedure, which is intended to prevent incurable genetic diseases from being transmitted to infants. However, some faith groups and ethicists warn that it could be used to create designer babies. If the bill passes the House of Lords, Britain would become the first country in the world to legalize the procedure. The recent outbreak of measles in California and other states has revived a national debate over vaccinations, as Deborah Potter reported last year. Should all parents be required to have their children vaccinated, even if they have religious or other objections?
For generations, it's been a rite of passage.
Can I listen to you? Can I listen to you?
A visit to the pediatrician and an injection or two. Rahm Kaiser Epstein is 15 months old. On this day, he's being vaccinated against measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox. He doesn't much like it. Neither does the four-month-old in the next room. Hayden's vaccines also covered multiple contagious diseases, including diphtheria and whooping cough.
I think it's just all the standard routine shots that I think we need to protect us, and you know, we all had the same shots as kids, so I don't see a reason he wouldn't.
At this pediatric practice in Amherst, Massachusetts, most children get all their vaccines on time. But Dr. John Snyder sees a growing number who insist on delaying vaccinations or flatly refuse them.
These are not bad parents. These are parents who do want to do the best thing, and unfortunately they are misinformed, and there's an enormous amount of misinformation out there. You have parents who are certain that vaccines are the cause of maybe autism or autoimmune diseases or whatever else they may have heard. And they know because they've done their quote-unquote research and they know the answers, and I'm just part of the problem.
Before her son Logan was born, Jody Costanza had already decided not to have him vaccinated, concerned about a possible link between some vaccines and autism or asthma.
I've read enough that said, you know, boys in particular seem to be more at risk, that there's maybe a genetic link that then makes boys at higher risk. Not that the vaccinations are causing the issues, but that the vaccinations might be triggering the cause of the issues. And until we know more, I don't feel good about it.
The autism concern stems mainly from a report published 15 years ago in a British medical journal that has since been withdrawn and labeled a fraud. But Costanza isn't convinced that doctors know best.
I don't ever put full power and control into anybody who says, I'm a scientist, I know what's going on. I don't feel like anybody really has the right to take away that decision-making power. And I also feel like it's an important responsibility for parents to not place the responsibility for the decisions around their parenting, their children, in the hands of someone else.
Every state in the country requires children to be vaccinated before they can go to school. But in all but two states, West Virginia and Mississippi, parents can opt out by stating a personal or religious objection. In most states, including Massachusetts, there's no proof or explanation required. It's as easy as signing a piece of paper.
If a parent says that that's a religious belief, that's what we need to go with, and we need to keep our fingers crossed that there isn't going to be an outbreak during the school year. Otherwise, those students would be held out of school until the period of communicability has passed. And then, unfortunately, other students and staff members could be subject to illness.
The vast majority of American children get all of their recommended vaccinations. Only about 1.5% are unvaccinated. but in some areas, the rate is significantly higher. In this part of western Massachusetts, for example, it's 6%, and that raises the risk of outbreaks. A community with a vaccination rate that low loses what's called herd immunity to contagious diseases, so anyone who hasn't been vaccinated can get sick. That includes babies too young to be immunized and people with certain health conditions who can't be vaccinated.
And there are some schools where the children are completely unimmunized. And those children are at very high risk should a child come with measles from another country. And again, all these diseases are just a plane ride away. And measles is incredibly contagious. One child who's susceptible, exposed to a child with the disease, there's a 90%+ chance they're going to get that disease.
Recent outbreaks of measles and whooping cough have been concentrated in areas with low vaccination rates, including religious communities of Orthodox Jews and evangelical Protestants, some of whom believe vaccination is interference with divine will. Some Catholics also object to a few specific vaccines because they're based on a cell line obtained from aborted fetal tissue in the 1960s. One of them is the relatively new chickenpox vaccine. And the Ferton family, devout Catholics, wrestled with whether to give it to their youngest child, Maggie.
On the one hand, you have your own child whom you love very dearly, and you don't want to have to undergo any kind of disease. But you're weighing against that an association with a product that is connected, yes, in a distant way, with abortion. And for those of us who are adamantly opposed to the harming of the innocent in any way, that's a very serious problem for us.
Instead of being vaccinated, Maggie was deliberately exposed to chickenpox and caught it, just as the rest of the family already had. It was the Fertons' way of making sure she was protected and posed no risk to anyone else. All of the children received every other recommended vaccine. Ferton is an ethicist with the National Catholic Bioethics Center, well aware that the Vatican advises Catholics they have the right to abstain from vaccinations only if it does not put children at risk, and that protecting the whole population is more important than concerns about how some vaccines are made.
There's a duty to care for one's health and for one's life, and there's a particular duty to care for one's children. The sense from the church is that people should be immunized for the sake of the common good, and children in particular should be immunized against any seriously dangerous disease.
In spite of the concern about abortion?
In spite, yes. The connection is thought to be distant enough to justify what's called cooperation with the wrongdoing of others.
Jody Costanza has no religious objection to vaccination. Most people who opt out don't. For her, it's a personal decision that she thinks is of no one else's concern.
People definitely will say that. You're putting other kids at risk with that. And maybe, but kids are also at risk when they pick up sticks and play sword fights on the playground and, slam each other into snowbanks and put rocks and snowballs. And, there's so many risks, and I'm not willing to take on guilt or ownership of that particular one at this point.
In some ways, vaccines have been victims of their own success. Illnesses that once ravaged communities are now out of sight, out of mind.
And these are nasty diseases. These aren't illnesses that most parents are familiar with now. These are diseases that frequently hospitalized, disfigured, permanently damaged, or killed children on a regular basis. There is really also a moral responsibility and an ethical responsibility, I think, for parents to look at their community and think, would I want these children to be sickened because I decided not to vaccinate my child?
What worries doctors like Snyder is that it might take a resurgence of preventable diseases for parents who now refuse vaccines to see them as essential. In Amherst, Massachusetts, I'm Deborah Potter for Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
We want to pursue the debate about vaccinations with Kevin Ekstrom, Editor-in-Chief of Religion News Service. Kevin, welcome. Welcome back here. How extensive is this outbreak?
So as of the end of January, there were more than 100 new cases of measles reported to the federal government. And while 100 sounds small, it's the rate of increase that's really disturbing. Last year, there were 600 cases total throughout the whole year. In the first month of 2015, we've already had 100. And really, you're seeing this in pockets. It's not, you know, super widespread where you're going to catch measles by going to the grocery store necessarily. It's not like Ebola with thousands of cases. But it's the rate of increase that really troubles people. And it shows that people are getting exposed to measles and other diseases because they're not getting vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. And the religious community, how does it respond to this?
So by and large, the religious community is fine with vaccines. Yes, there are some questions, there are some concerns out there, but for the most part, everybody is on board with vaccines. Where we've seen this pop up in religious populations, where we've seen measles, is in communities that don't typically get vaccinated. So the Amish in Ohio, for example. It's not that they don't believe in vaccines, but they're not required to go to public school, so they don't typically get it. Christian Scientists typically don't get vaccinated because they don't believe in medicine, but when there have been outbreaks, they have been vaccinated. So there's really no, you know, widespread religious objection to the vaccine. It's more of a what they call a personal belief. Yeah. It's that I have a belief that these vaccines are harmful or that they don't work, or I don't believe that somebody else should be telling me how I should raise my kids.
Or a suspicion of science and a suspicion of the government.
Right. A lot of the anti-vaccine crowd is not only that they don't like vaccines, but they don't like any study that is funded by the government or pharmaceutical companies or really anybody else that sort of debunks this. So there was, as Deborah's piece said, you know, there was this widespread link between autism and vaccines. That's been debunked, it's been thrown out, it's been retracted. I mean, they've said it's not true, but yet people still believe it. And any study that comes along counter to that, there's this great deal of suspicion out there about anything that runs counter to your preordained views.
And for it to work, you have to have not only your own child vaccinated, but everybody else has to have the vaccination too, right?
Right. You need about 95% vaccination rates in order for them to actually work, because everybody has to be vaccinated in order for individuals to be protected. And what we're seeing in these outbreaks is pockets where there's high rates of kids who aren't getting vaccinated. And that's where it's catching in Marin County in California, in Orange County, California, New Jersey, and everywhere else. So there's a need for a collective good response here to take care of kids, and that's really being challenged.
Hmm. Kevin Ekstrom, many thanks.
Sure.
We have a report now on the problems of women, many of them single mothers, who have been in the military and come back to neither jobs nor homes. Even the Veterans Administration concedes that the services available for women vets are not as extensive as those for men. But correspondent Bob Faw found a place where some homeless female vets are getting the help they need. It's called Final Salute.
For women who serve in the American military, especially those with children deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan, the toughest challenge can be when they come home. Veteran Chiquita Pena.
We're very proud people in uniform. You know, we want to keep ourselves together. We want to be the problem solvers, the fixers, you know, the leaders. Well, when you go from being a leader to being the person that needs the help, that needs the hand up,
That's rough.
It's rough, and it hurts.
The Department of Veterans Affairs says that from 2006 to 2010, the number of homeless female veterans doubled. Veronica Witherspoon is one of an estimated more than 15,000 women vets who ended up homeless.
We go to war, protect our country, and we come home to nothing.
After deployment in Afghanistan, Navy Reservist Witherspoon ended up living with her mother and felt, she says, like damaged goods.
How did I become homeless? Like, where do I begin to look? How do I pick up these pieces? Because at that point, I felt broken. Like somebody just pushed me down and I just fell apart.
Deployed abroad twice, Army Reservist Chiquita Pena, whose husband was also abroad, was jobless and needed a place to live with her 2.5-year-old daughter, Nayeli. Final Salute got her back on her feet.
we stereotype homelessness with, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, a hobo or a bum or someone who's a wino or drinking on the street. This is the new face of homelessness.
What do you mean by that?
My face. I'm what homelessness looks like. What Final Salute does is keep you looking like this before you end up on the street.
Jaspin Booth, a former Army captain, not only understood the problem, she decided to do something about it.
We have a core set of principles called warrior ethos. A portion of that warrior ethos is to never leave a fallen comrade. And that was my main reason for putting my own money up front, because these are my sisters. I took an oath, and I'm bound to that, and I had to honor my commitment.
4 years ago, with $15,000 from her own pocket, she opened a house for homeless female veterans and named her organization Final Salute.
Once you're dead, you don't know if you're getting a final salute. For some people, they need that final salute now. They need that act of respect in their time of need.
Final Salute, funded now by private contributions, is in Alexandria, Virginia, and houses up to 8 single women and women with children. Housing and food are provided free for up to 2 years, although a lot of women stay for less time. Veteran Cynthia Stevenson.
She helps you with everything you need. Financially, they have classes, you know, to help you learn how to take care of your finances. Classes on how to, you know, get your mind together and get prepared for the world, you know, especially if you're coming back from any deployment.
At Final Salute, no one is coddled. There's a zero tolerance policy for drugs and violence and biweekly sessions with a social worker.
We could write, you know, a list of our top 5 things that we want to accomplish in 2015.
The emphasis, says Booth, is on personal responsibility.
They clean the house themselves. We don't prepare their meals. They cook, they feed themselves and their children. You know, so again, we will give you what you need to succeed, but we're not here to give you a handout or hold your hand. We'll offer them truly a hand up, but they know that it begins with them.
13-year veteran Booth knows a little something about starting over. In 2005, not only did Hurricane Katrina destroy everything she owned, she's also a cancer survivor. But all that, she says, wasn't the hardest part. Though Veterans Affairs supplies homes for male vets, very little was being done for women.
The hardest part of that experience was being told that because I was a woman veteran, there was nothing available to me. That's what really got me beside myself, because I was basically told because I wasn't a man, I was not as important, and my service wasn't as important.
What kept her going, she says, was her anger, her determination, and faith.
I believe that God puts you through certain things in order to prepare you for a greater mission later on in life. He doesn't give anyone a failing mission or a failing calling. However, he doesn't give you a roadmap either. So especially dealing with nonprofits, you know, sometimes you don't know where the money is going to come from or if it's going to come, but he hasn't failed me. And so that's why I always say it's divine intervention.
The Department of Veterans Affairs, which has vowed to end homelessness this year for veterans, says there's an acute need to improve services for female vets. The General Accounting Office found that 60% of shelters for female vets do not accept children. Both the VA and the GAO found that in those shelters, basic protections like locks and separate floors for men and women were often lacking.
To put you in a transitional housing facility where there are like hundreds of men and a few women trickled here and there, how is that even safe or logical? And some of these facilities are co-housing women with registered male sex offenders. Like, how is that? I mean, who does that?
At Final Salute, one of just 5 shelters like it in the country, Booth says she's been able to help over 350 female vets, like Haley Zimmerman, who after deployment in Afghanistan says she would have ended up on somebody's couch.
I can save money. I can finish my school. It allowed me to be able to accomplish the things that I need to move forward.
Final Salute helped Veronica Witherspoon, who now has a job.
It's kind of like being in a sorority. You have that connection because you all have been through that basic training. You've been deployed.
Could you have done it without Final Salute?
Without the support of Final Salute and my family, if they weren't there, I don't think I would be the person I am today.
Help to Chiquita Pena, now successfully housed with her daughter and husband.
they kind of show you the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, hey, you know what? It's not that bad. Look, there are other service members just like you. You're not a dirtbag. You're not, you know, a failure. You know, you're not a failure.
Jazz Booth hopes that someday Final Salute will go out of business. For now, she concedes, that's little more than a pipe dream.
We were created to fill an American void. If I'm still doing this 20 or 30 years down the road, we are still not getting it as a country. And we're just making a poor effort as a society to take care of all of our veterans. We have enough wealth, power, and influence. You know, we can liberate other countries and, you know, clear up their natural disasters. You know, women veterans are now Americans' natural disaster.
As more and more military women return from service, Jazz Booth will continue to give them both a final salute and an opportunity. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bob Faw in Alexandria, Virginia.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, 13-year-old Quintavious Johnson singing the Lord's Prayer at the National Prayer Breakfast.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.